Hello and welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people about all the things you need to know right now. I'm Fazlan Iso, joining you all the way from Cape Town, South Africa. And this is your weekly wrap-up of innovation across the worlds of business, design, tech, and culture, where we cut through the noise to give you the takeaways that matter. We're joined today by the newest additions to the Label Sessions roster, as well as some old faces. Welcome, Nick Sherrod, founder and MD of Label Sessions. Nick, what are we looking at today?
She's maybe one of the old faces, by the way, that new intro. Anyway, so the key things clients have been talking to us about this week is all aspects of the TikTok ban in the US and what it means to people who are looking to build brands, but also how to respond to a crisis, actually. Maybe some of the interesting things that come from the way that TikTok have responded. We're also talking about AI and how that applies to fintech, well or badly, in terms of how well different apps have responded to what's going on in the financial world. And then also from an ESG perspective, looking at supply chains and deliveries and how they can be more green.
Nice. We're also joined by Josh Nixon, expert content producer here at Label Sessions. Josh, what Label Sessions content is going out this week?
Well, other than this, which you'll be listening to right now, we have a couple of LittleMate accelerators. So we're bringing in a new form of accelerator that's powered by our LittleMates. And we have two coming up very soon that are in the realms of sonic branding and cybersecurity, which are both going to be very exciting prospects. And we're looking forward to giving you all details on that. And our good friends at FinTech Scotland, we always help out with their financial regulation innovation lab. So I'll be popping along to one of their events tomorrow. The call for this innovation lab is the initiative to address financial crime. And I always go along with a lot and get some interviews with the people who are there and catch a sort of feel for the day. And we'll be looking forward to sharing more about that too.
And that's just for everyone who didn't catch last week. That's partly because last week we suggested that the lab was about financial crime, which gave a different angle to the whole nature of it. So it's ways to respond to very clearly is what we're doing.
I think that's probably why a lot of people tuned in. And then we're bitterly disappointed. Awesome. As mentioned, this week we are joined by two new label mates, brand new to the roster and ready to share their insights. Let's just introduce them before we dive into a bit more about their stories and what is happening in their industry right now. Welcome, Brene De La Cruz, a creative visionary and design professor specializing in multimedia innovation and brand transformation, who's worked with everyone from Pepsi Global through to the Parsons School of Design. Welcome, Renee.
Nice to meet you all. Beautiful morning.
Amazing. And just to say, Renee is joining us from Brooklyn. So it is morning for him. Next up, we're joined by Simon Dean, creative director and storyteller with over 20 years of experience leading brand and marketing projects for industry giants like Disney, Warner Brothers, and Meta. Welcome, Simon.
Hi, lovely to meet you all, and good afternoon.
Fantastic. Let's jump straight in, and we'll kick it off with Renee. Can you let us know a little bit about your story? How did you get to be where you are today?
Thank you very much for your time. Nice to meet everybody. Happy to be here and contribute to Label Sessions. Yes, I'm going to be very straightforward. It's about passion, perseverance. It's about, like, if you have it, you're going to go get it no matter what. You're going to fail. You're going to have success. So I started last century. In the 20th century, when innovation was like, what is that? Yes, I was passionate about the future on that time. I was passionate to see the hardware, then software, and now we're into wetware. So I saw all of that coming into light, into the future, and now we're living that future. So what I have been doing in my past professional experiences is to look for opportunities where I can innovate, I can contribute to the good of society, also the goodness of the brands, and look for insights where you can push and elevate the brand into new ways of hyper-personalization. Now we're into hyper-personalization, but yes, I started very way back. I'm going to be clear, 1989, when I graduated, I was forced to use the computer versus my hands. But I see a cycle coming back that the hands are the new innovation because we need to integrate the physicality of ourselves. We're going through digital fatigue as we speak. And so we're now, as humans, discovering back the hands, converging to technology. So I'm going to stop there. I just gave you a lot.
Thank you, Renee. Auntie Simon. Simon, how have you gotten to where you are in your career at the minute?
I think I started off in my bedroom playing around with music. I became a DJ. I started playing around with a sampler back in the day and learned how to do things using that, looping sounds and making things. And that's kind of where I started from. I then went to university and then went on to make snowboard videos, what I first started doing. So I learned the theory of making and telling stories through making these videos, learning how to edit, learn how to produce, how to make things come together. And I've kind of gone sort of 360 from working then with big organizations like Disney and Warner Brothers. I've now gone back really into doing my own thing where I've been working on my own work, where I've had to edit and produce my own stuff. And it's been really exciting to see the democratization of creativity, meaning that when I first started, you had edit suites and things like that were in big rooms somewhere. You couldn't do any of this at home. And now you can do everything in your phone. It's as simple as that. And really, it's really exciting that now every kid out there has a phone and has got a TV studio in their pocket, and they can make and produce great work. So it's that's how I started and sort of gone back.
Lovely. And I think that kind of like leads us nicely into our first news pick of the week. It's all video related, obviously. And that's the TikTok ban, or the lack of TikTok ban is probably a better way to put it. I think the question really is, how do brands have come to rely on all of these channels? What do we need to be looking out for as brands when it comes to these channels that we now rely on? How do we become more resilient when it comes to this? How should we think about social media in general?
I think that's an interesting one, because I was listening to you both introducing your story, both Renee and Simon, and you were talking about essentially being like the making thing is quite innate to you, if you like, and it comes into different channels. It's interesting in terms of the way the brands have thought about social media so far. It's all been very much kind of channel by channel on the tactics that come through. It's interesting, just sorting through last week with different brand leaders who were working out what to do when one of them got turned off. It's almost like maybe it's more useful now to think about these things as a, social as a thing that you do rather than as a kind of channel exercise. I don't know what your take on that is.
I think it's really interesting what's happened. I think what TikTok did yesterday was turn everything off and just say, hey, how are you going to live without it? And I think a lot of brands have now got to realize that you can't focus on one channel and you've got to build a community. Authenticity is really important with brands now. So what I think is really important is that the brands now work out how to build that sense of community through all sorts of different ways. And so their social team just doesn't just focus on the big popular one, which at the moment is TikTok. You've got to think about how you spread it among all of the different channels that you can use to do this.
Yes, I agree. I must say that we're living in an era of overload content. I think brands should consider thinking of being platform agnostics. We rely a lot on platforms, and suddenly we forget the true DNA of content. So that means that this is within the chaos, that's where you get out of your comfort zone, get uncomfortable, react, learn, get that data insights from users, from the brand, from stakeholders, from the government, what's happening socially with the politics, how it's affecting daily lives of users that rely on social media. By the way, that social media, I think, has to evolve to people's media. Social is too soft. Now, right now, the platforms are filtering very serious content. That brands are part of those serious content, and they're responsible to behave accordingly. So we're going to an inflection point, literally, as technology moves so fast and brands are catching up. So I think brands should take this moment just to regroup, listen, hear the sentiment, and readapt to the new forms.
It is interesting too, because I think there's so many marketing leaders who sort of come up through a world that is quite dominated by social media. And it's kind of interesting at the moment now, because at some level, I feel we've almost gone back in time a little bit, because there aren't really social media platforms in the sense that we knew them, in the sense that there's places that kind of had everybody on it. There's content from brands, there's people from all kinds of different backgrounds, they're very kind of global platforms. Essentially, what we've gone to now is back into almost like message boards. You kind of got Twitter, which is one group, Blue Sky, another group in the UK at least. And it's just, it's back to message boards. It's an interesting, you know, it's interesting in terms of that with the Web 2 idea that seems so dominant for a while. It's kind of evaporated. And for a lot of marketing leaders, I think that's quite a challenging thing, because that's how lots of them made their name, is kind of working out how you could take brands into the new world. And then the new world has shifted again.
I think there's an evolution going on. And also, if you look at generations, I mean, I've worked very much with the Gen and then the Gen Z and the Gen Alpha market. Now, they are very different. Gen Alpha are playing Roblox. If you want to talk to them, you talk to through gaming. That is where you're going to talk to them. So, you know, this social media era right now is about to change again. And that audience, yeah, you're going to find the politicians are going to go on Roblox in the future to talk to their audiences. Right. I think that, that things are changing. We've got GTA coming out this year. This is going to be a revolutionary new game. There's going to be lots of social interaction within that game that is going to take on... I predict that this year, at the end of the year, you are going to see some people are going to do some amazing things. People are already doing Shakespeare in GTA. There is going to be loads more of that kind of thing going on. And I think that that is going to be the new place to be, because that is what the sort of Second Life, that sort of world outside of your real world, is where a lot of young people are. And if brands and organizations want to know how to talk to them, that is where they are. They are not watching television, they are playing games.
I must say, I agree. One of the opportunities I see is to retake the physical environments, the immersive environments of physicality of humans, connecting through humans, but at the same time being augmented by technology with immersive experiences. So that's where the meta, not meta from Facebook, but the true meta of the total data being in a spatial environment. It's going to be a new frontier that is happening now silently, but it's going to be a way of augmenting physicality and amplifying experiences that are delightful for the users of the brands, and also for the good of society, for well-being. So there's a lot of new opportunities popping out. It's just to have the sensitivity and tolerance to look at all the three other 360 touch points, because that's going to be equally social. Sorry, I get excited about this, so I'm going to stop.
No, but I actually want to ask a follow-up question about the excitement, because I know the way we're talking about this, and in particular you two are talking about this, is saying, we're essentially saying that the whole world's changing really fast, and that's really exciting. One of the things I wanted to pick up on was there's a lot of leaders who will be listening to this. And I know, because I've heard them over the last week or so, saying everything's changing really quickly, and that's really terrifying. And you both had loads of your kind of the way you told your story was about adaptation over time. What's your kind of sense of how do you stay resilient through that? How do you get to a place where you're thinking about the new thing as the exciting thing?
It never stops. And I think from a creative standpoint, creative people, that's what we love. We love the fences coming down or changing and having to adapt to where we are. I think if it wasn't like that, I'd be bored. For me, and I'm sure for Renee as well, for me, that's the exciting thing. And I'm always curious, always trying to learn something new. My daughter plays Roblox a lot. So I go upstairs and I see what she's doing and try to understand what's going on, because it is fascinating. And as somebody who's worked a lot in the young adult kids space, I've learned a lot from that. And then seeing that audience build and build, I've seen my audience who watched High School Musical, which I worked on very, many years ago, through to now adulthood. And I can still see little things that we learned through that time. And I think it is always moving on, and it always will do. And I think if you're a leader or a leadership role, it's very important to have one eye open for today, because you've got to be there right now, but you also got to have that other eye open for the future. How is your business going to develop, and how can you be part of that?
I agree totally with Simon. We're on the same wavelength. Right now, we're entering new frontiers. That's exciting, by the way. We're getting out of the comfort zone for everybody, and no matter what, brands, governments, individuals, families. The advent of AI is hopefully providing new light if done properly. And there's no other way. So what I see when there's these moments, well, this is a very peculiar moment in lifetime where technology has gone through the sound barrier and it's going faster and fast, and we're catching up. So I see opportunities versus getting scared. Oh my God, what am I gonna do? I see opportunities, and based on that, that's where you, at least in New York, you go out and you get insights, research by just watching society around you, going to the subway, going around, going to the bodega, watching people's behaviors, fashion, and that's where you see all these mix of insights and put it into data, and then you go back to brands and tell them this is what's happening. Let's kickstart that brand operating system to start that creative automation so we can do hyper-personalization. That's the way we need to start thinking right now. There's no other way, by the way. You have to go fast, break fast, learn fast, go back, sentiment, insights, research in real time. We have that. AI is capable of providing all of that right now. So there's no other way to just get into the call and make it happen and learn.
Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of making mistakes. That was a mantra that we had when I was at Warner Brothers. Was don't worry. Make mistakes and make them quickly, and then move on. And I think that's really important.
Next up, in what has been a busy week of news and information, is how smart is AI in fintech? So we're seeing a lot more. Of sort of the evidence show that sometimes the information that AI is giving is not always that correct. And that obviously becomes a bit more of a problem when it's around something like fintech and around something like your money. And we're also seeing a lot of people try to game the system, specifically parents when it comes to their kids, and getting them, you know, onto these platforms and onto these things quite early, so that they can start building their credit history and their credit score and all of these sort of things beforehand. But really, how do you sort of work with this unreliable, where we are at the minute, AI, and something that needs to be very reliable, like fintech? Simon's just like, nope.
I think the reality going forward is there are some things that are great for AI and some things that aren't.
Yep.
Fintech, I'm not sure if it's the greatest place, because I don't know about you. My hard-earned money, I like to talk to somebody human about me what to do with it, because I want to do the right thing with it. I'm not going to listen to an AI saying, oh, you need to do this, you need that. So for me, I would pay extra to talk to a human being. So if I was a bank, I'd set up a free AI version and then go at the end, hey, that's what my AI thinks. But if you want to speak to a human being, you can talk to him and he's going to cost you this. I think there's a business in that. But yeah, I would never trust an AI with my money. Thank you very much.
Yes, I agree, Simon. It's a very delicate subject lately, with so much hacking and cyber crime happening and stealing identities, that God knows what's happening, and we don't know it's happening in our backs. I will stay cautious, because this is an area where I wouldn't be experimenting my finances through an AI that is learning. It's a baby learning right now. What I do see is opportunities in the consumer side, on the family side. Like I can see, since we are getting into the agentic era, it could be, instead of a large language model, a family language model that will help the agentic assistant learn about our family needs in a very humane way. And that language model later will connect to the AI finances. So there's going to be like an approved model from my family that will connect to see what are the best options around into the AI smart tech, fintech advances. Obviously, everything is for profit, even the finances of the family. So I will be very cautious within the fintech environment. And it's obvious, fintech is just a baby starting to pop up using AI.
This is also one of those areas where you have the option sometimes to transform a thing or to just add a new technology to an existing design. And I think that's where a lot of these problems come up, because I think that's a big issue within the whole kind of service design thinking community, I think. Because a lot of these fintech apps, essentially their kind of hypothesis seems to be that people need to manage their money more carefully, and therefore the tech can open up new possibilities for them. The reality is most people don't have enough money. And so it doesn't matter necessarily if you analyze a little better as to whether that's going to take you a step forward. But to Renee's point, there's really interesting things you can start to do around family money, around how you can help people, see options they might not be able to see. But there's so much of this, and credit scores are absolutely at the center of this, where if we just do the old thing a bit more efficiently, we'll essentially just be creating a bigger and bigger problem. Versus if we take the opportunity maybe to think about it a different way, there's actually something that opens up.
Yes, I agree with Simon. The human touch, the human to human, like talking to another person. When you go to these calls, automated systems, they go voice activated, is horrible. Obviously, I have an accent. So it's when I call, it's sometimes very torturous to go through to get a human just to talk. So this is something, again, opportunities, but they're very challenging opportunities going through a global English way. I don't know. It's the same language, but it gets pronounced differently.
I would say one thing that's interesting, just from some experiments we were running, it was a couple of years ago now. But it's interesting, that thing in terms of human touch and anonymity in money, because actually, whilst most of the time anonymity is just used as sort of less personal service currently, there are actually some interesting patterns around money in particular and anonymity as a helpful thing. And actually, when you were talking about before the kind of agentic structure or future around money, there've been some experiments in the past around services that would work in a different way. So one of them we looked at in the past was within families, people do help each other out quite a lot, but the conversations are very difficult. So for instance, one of the things we looked at a previous lab project was a scenario where a parent with adult children could say, in certain scenarios, just transfer them the money. So like if their balance goes below £500 overdrawn, or there's a bill upcoming they can't do, just do it. We don't have to talk about it. And actually, that was really popular in that kind of setting. So it's interesting. And actually, there was a really interesting work from one of the labs, I think it was out of Germany, I saw last year, which is very futures focused and a little bit uncomfortable, but interesting, which is around doing similar things around inheritance. So saying, actually, you don't just pass a pot of money as such, but you pass a pot with instructions. So it's things like, if this person can show they can manage money a bit, so it's not just saying when they're 25 or whatever, it's just saying actually if they can manage money for a while, which we can track in a banking environment, then they can then give them the rest of the inheritance and these kind of things. So there is interesting in terms of there might be some interesting, very radical new possibilities that come through all of this. But in the short term, not missing the fact that quite often a lot of the apps that have, the sort of financial apps that have AI included are quite exploitative. Lots of new possibilities, but it's in a rough patch, I think.
It's a brave new world. I think the great thing generally about AI is it can do some amazing things for us, but there are some things that will take absolute liberties, and we're in that era now where we're going to have to work out how to navigate that through. And I do think that in a couple of years' time, probably quicker than that, actually, we'll probably start seeing things going, oh my God, I can't believe we didn't do it like this until we knew this. So I think things do change, very, very quickly. And you realize that, oh, how did we live without that? So yeah, I think you're right. There are some things that are going to work that are going to be great, and there are some things that are a little bit.
One of the interesting things that has been introduced here in South Africa is that our revenue service has introduced AI and auto assessments. So they have AI sort of scraping your bank account and then running an auto assessment to make sure everything's in order when it comes to your tax return. And then sort of pings out a million or so sort of auto assessments. It sometimes is correct. It is sometimes way off. So the problem is that you end up having to do the thing anyway. So you get the auto assessment, but you still have to do your taxes and you still have to do it in the proper way, because there's no that kind of faith in it. And that sort of, this is working 100% is completely not there. So it has been an interesting experiment. It's cleared up a lot of time for some people, but added a lot of extra time for other people. So, you know.
I worked on a project that was an artwork, piece of work that was done in AI. And unfortunately, the client came back and said, we want changes. And of course, because it was done in AI, you couldn't just do the normal changes. So guess what we had to do? We had to completely remake it. So yes, so you've got to be careful.
Our next sort of topic that has been top of mind and has been a big thing, not only this week, but really has been a topic on everyone's mind, is obviously how we make deliveries and the whole supply chain sustainability. So electric vehicles and consumer behavior often get a lot of attention. And this week we saw some major investments into EV trucks and greening the whole delivery system for these big companies. But how much are consumers demanding this? How much are regulators demanding this? How much do we need this to happen, especially when faced with what we spoke about last week, which is the greenlashing thing? What are the thoughts on this and how we move forward into the future?
I'm very scared that the environmental damage that we've done to this planet is now being forgotten about. And the issue, I think, is that, you know, a lot of us haven't got so much money as we used to have, maybe, or, you know, times are tough at the moment. And then somebody comes along and says, yeah, well, if you want to have these EV trucks or whatever, it's going to cost you an extra such and such. I don't think a lot of people are prepared to pay for that. And I think that's a worry. And I think that actually we probably need to reset the agenda a little bit and maybe talk about the realities of why we're having to do some of these things and explain them in a crazy way, just in a very pragmatic. See this? This is what's happened. This is why we're doing this. And this is why we're trying to fix it, instead of you're wrong, you're right, this science is wrong, whatever. I think we've got, you know, I think there needs to be a reset of that kind of agenda.
Yes, this is a very important subject. Being impacted in my area in Brooklyn because of this, like the example of Amazon, I feel the total impact of two brand new warehouses right very near from me. So that's the transportation happening of the big trucks, medium trucks, the bicycles, then the footprint of deliveries by foot. I see, and then you see there's a saturation of transportation within the New York City environment and Brooklyn. And that brings me up to why are we up? How did we get here? And then I see, well, again, we go back to technology, the power of immediacy. I want everything now, even a coffee. I want a delivery of a Starbucks coffee now to my home. So that's, I think we humans are getting used to immediacy and it's making us lazy. And that's impacting demand because obviously we want everything here delivered. We don't want to walk no longer. We want to just have everything like the snap. And that's troubling because now that's where you see that the infrastructure of traditional city urban planning is being impacted by the demand of the immediacy of technology of having everything now. So in the case of Amazon, they're just reacting to demand. People who just want to have everything now, no matter what. So I think if brands are truly authentic, they can look into the mirror and see the impact that they're doing, and be honest with the consumer and include the consumer, hey, this is the impact you're doing by just having a delivery of a tiny need. Here, think about the footprint of the carbon footprint, of the emissions that you just did just for having a coffee. I'm being very open, not using Amazon as an example. It's just the consumer behavior of even having a coffee from Starbucks delivered to my front door. When I can do coffee inside, I don't need a coffee from Starbucks. It's just consumer behavior. I think we need to look at ourselves and see how we are impacted by the immediacy of needs of the now. So that will be my observation about the supply chain sustainability. That will be my take. Right,
it's interesting as well. I think that there's been a lot of perception for a while that the sort of move around ESG was driven by consumer perception or the kind of consumer demand to a certain degree, or sort of activism that was driving regulation, which maybe has been the case in certain places. But that then means that now, when certain governments around the world are being less keen on things, people start to think the agenda evaporates. I actually think that's a slightly different take. And in some ways, the investments that are happening even this year. So it's Amazon, of all companies, that are investing $1 billion in supply chain sustainability around trucks in Europe. It's Harbinger in the US who are raising $100 million around EV trucks. And I think the sort of tweak in the messaging or in the focus around this is this whole idea of supply chain accountability. So for a lot of the time, that has been driven and it has massive impacts for climate change, because actually if big companies or all companies start to become accountable for the whole supply chain, including their deliveries, then you actually have a mechanism to drive change. But actually, even in the parts of the world where there's more pushback against the environmental agenda, there's still a driver around around making companies accountable for what their supply chain is and how it works. So in terms of, in the American example, there is more pushback on ESG as such just now, but there's a growing agenda around Made in America, around the impact of their operations in different ways. So, you know, people may feel different ways about the which agenda they're closest to, but I actually think there's a positive opportunity in there to keep companies accountable for what their supply chain is, and therefore to drive a change and drive a transition in whichever journey they're kind of thinking about that. But that's a kind of key opportunity, I think, for innovation leaders and companies is now to focus down on this thing of supply chain accountability.
Yeah, we humans are accountable too. It's like a change of behavior must be part. It's a conversation that is all of us. Mm-hmm. But it will take generations to truly understand. Well, the millennials and Gen Zs will be thinking about us a lot. I'm a baby boomer. Sorry. Oh my God. I am a Gen Xer.
Forgotten generation. Don't worry.
So yes. Behavior. It's very important. Consumer behavior. We humans are part of it. So it's not just the Amazons and all the shipping and needs. Yes, it's a very. I think this one is one of the biggest topic. It's a very delicate topic.
I think it's almost we have to start looking at our own supply chain, our own sort of procurement, the way we're doing things. Like, what does your procurement strategy look like? Is it this? I want it now, and I want it as soon as possible, or is it I'm actually going to take the time to make it at home or do something? So you know, it is an interesting sort of changing the consumer behavior to actually be more sustainable in thought.
This also relates to this weird change in jobs as well that we were talking about the other day, which is it used to be, so we've got a talk next week, one of the universities was a bunch of bright graduates looking at what people wanting to lead innovation. And it used to be very much that if you were looking for a department, if you were a kind of innovative, creative person who wanted to have a positive impact on the world, you'd be looking to work in marketing, which there's great opportunity to do that. But a lot of modern marketing jobs are quite administrative. Whereas actually some of the less glamorous departments, actually, when you speak now to procurement directors in companies, they're talking about climate change and supply chain diversity and all these kind of things. It's a really interesting moment where some of the, I guess, historically less glamorous departments are actually facing into big issues all of a sudden. It's a sort of weird moment in the job market.
Just a quick shout out to our next upcoming podcast. We do have a procurement specialist on quite soon. So we'll revisit all of this then. To wrap up, I thought I'd ask all of you what your cultural picks of the week are. What best film, music, TV, design, book that you found have been inspired by this week? And on a positive note?
Cool. I have been watching Severance. I just did a video, actually, beautiful. I just put up on LinkedIn about Apple TV Plus, the unsung hero of streaming. This amazing shows on Apple TV Plus. They've just finished the season two of Silo, which is a twist show that, if you haven't seen, it's a bit like Lost, but they've written the books already, so they know how it's going to end. So that's good news. We've also got Trying, which is a show about the adoption process. And as I've had family members that have been through the adoption process, it is pretty real to life. And it's a sort of a great comedy show to watch. So I really recommend that. And obviously Severance is really, really good. And there's Harrison Ford's TV show that he's made with about what's it called? Shrinking. That's the one. That is a phenomenal show as well. So Apple TV, if you get a chance for a free view of that one, I would recommend. There's lots of great stuff on there.
They won big with that free weekend in terms of getting everyone hooked onto Severance. 100% score on Metacritic that first episode. Renee, you okay?
Yes, on my end, I just saw last night the movie Emilia Perez. I was very impressed by the convergence of musical into a very tough subject, culture, beautiful cinema. It was beautiful orchestrated, very impressed, and very tough subject. So they gave a new genre, I guess, with tough subjects, with including musical, but in a very serious way. It feels very, that film was a jewel. I was very, even visually. Also, lately, I'm into vinyls, like Aphex Twin.
Oh, nice.
Vinyl. Then you can mix it with Bob Marley. And then going back to Boards of Canada.
Wow, look at them. Yes. They're great.
Oh,
just got them handy.
Yes,
can we hear this podcast shoppable?
But vinyl.
Just pop up a little Amazon thing with the link to you.
Yeah. I'm reading this book. This book was given to me for Christmas by my son, The 50 Years of Video Art.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful. I suggest it was done by Barbara London. She's the curator of the MoMA. So, yes, I just gave you what's around me lately.
Well, nice. Week, fantastic.
Yeah. Nick, any interesting chess books?
For those that didn't read, last week I talked about, it's genuinely a good book called The History of Cheating at Chess. It is genuinely quite a good book. And it's quite niche, but you know. Everyone's going to have a niche interest. What other good books this week? Science Fiction by Scott Liddell, who's also a label mate. But it's a really interesting book around the multiverse, which sounds, it's a love story about the multiverse. But that would be my recommendation of the week.
Sounds good.
Josh, I'm going to ask you, because Renee brought out his record. So you got to have...
Yeah, we've got a trio of record collectors in here, because I can see Simon's in the background. Obviously, Renee's got his close to hand. So. Yeah, fantastic stuff. So I'm obviously a big record collector too. But the thing that I want to really share is, obviously, I think it was this Thursday, just gone, we lost one of the great directors of our time, David Lynch. And it made me really want to go back and check out his films, because the films that I watched when I was growing up a lot. The one that I went back to recently was Mulholland Drive, which is obviously the big one. That is a crown of his sort of filmography for a lot. Next to Twin Peaks, of course, but that's been for me film. Truly one of my favorite films of all time. I really want to give a send off to just one of the greatest directors I know, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice. I just want to co-sign Simon's Severance. If you haven't checked it out, have a look at it. It's incredible. work-life balance in the extreme.
Definitely. And also check out their experiential that they did in New York. That was pretty special as well.
Is that still happening? Or I mean, I saw the news and it was very unique. Grand Central, right?
Yes. They got all the actors that are in the show to be inside this cube. Yeah. I don't know how long they were in there for, but as a piece of experiential, something that probably, there was a lot of people there that saw it actually live, but it was more about the video of people taking it, sharing on social.
Exactly. That's right.
Fantastic way of getting your brand out there with these experiential moments. You're probably going to get more attention from the social angle of it being shared and posted organically than you are from the actual people that are going to be there. So it's a brilliant way to build your brand.
Totally agree.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I saw people who had no interest in the show, in marketing, in brands, any of it, and they were talking about it. So it definitely worked. Amazing. Any last comments from anyone before we wrap? Have we gone on the list? I'll just put everyone on the spot. Or
last comment. You're just gone rogue at this point. This is just
I've lost the cards of one. I'm just
quite the power
Oh my God. Something I've been thinking a lot, the future is yesterday. The now is what's next. So we're living a very peculiar moments of transition, bridging from the old ways to the new frontier. So I only see opportunities is just to have the right attitude and don't be afraid to go to the new. That's it.
Always look to the future. I think it's a really good point. And I think on today, which if you're listening now, it is Monday. It's supposed to be allegedly the most depressing day of the year. It's called Blue Monday originally. But I tell you what, after talking to you guys, it's been I'm quite excited about the future. And I think there's quite a few things. We've got quite a few hurdles to get across, yes. I'm sure. But I think the future is it still is bright and exciting. Don't be afraid.
Thank you all for joining us. We hope you're all caught up on the world of innovation this week. If you want to get access to label sessions for your brand or have your teams mentored by our leaders, get in touch via our website or any of the social networks around, including TikTok. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Cheers, all.